Hey, thanks for downloading today's show with fermentation educator Tara Whitsitt. Before we get into the episode, I want you to keep your ears open for a fun and exciting opportunity that I created exclusively for A Sustainable Mind listeners. It will give you the chance to connect with past guests and other listeners around the world. I'll tell you a little bit about it later in today's show, so stay tuned. Now, without further ado, this is A Sustainable Mind, episode 22.
I kind of recognized there was a disconnect for me between how this animal got to my plate and where the animal came from and how they were like so widely available and packaged in plastic in every grocery store. And a lot of people in my generation and generations older than myself, you know, we grew up with this kind of industrial food system where that's just what you're expected to eat.
Welcome to A Sustainable Mind podcast, where we delve into the minds behind today's most impactful environmental campaigns, organizations, and startups, inspiring the environmental change makers of tomorrow. I'm your host, Marjorie Alexander. Tara Whitsitt is a social activist, artist, and food preservationist originally from Houston, Texas. Her passions for fermenting and growing food, living communally, and teaching inspired her to launch Fermentation on Wheels, which is a mobile food preservation teaching space where she gives vegetable fermentation workshops that correspond with the regional and seasonal produce of each destination during her travels. So welcome to the show, Tara.
Thanks.
So I've been reading a ton about your awesome Fermentation on Wheels project. I think that that is so cool. But before I get into that, I wanted to ask you if the topics of nature or the environment or sustainability ever were present in your home growing up. Can you tell us a bit about that?
I grew up in very urban America. So no, not at all. I grew up in Houston, Texas, and we didn't really go out into nature much. I didn't really understand the entire food chain until I got older, actually, because I had never been to a farm or just really thought about those cycles until I was older.
Was there a certain thing that happened or kind of a light bulb that happened for you that made you kind of make that switch in your own life?
Well, I've definitely always been very interested in food and life. And I became vegetarian at a very young age because I kind of recognized there was a disconnect for me between how this animal got to my plate and where the animal came from and how they were like so widely available and packaged in plastic in every grocery store. And yeah, I mean, I definitely started questioning that aspect of food when I was like 6 or 7 years old when I became vegetarian. And then I think just through having to, you know, I had a very different diet from the rest of my family. So I had to learn from a young age how to prepare a lot of food on my own. Mm-hmm. And my mom was really great about that. She got me cookbooks and, you know, believed that I would make it work if that was really what I wanted to do. And so I definitely began integrating like deeper thought in food and my diet, you know, at a very young age. And I think that that just progressed more and more so as I got older. And then it wasn't really until I moved to Denmark when I was 19, I studied overseas, and I had moved to Denmark from Shreveport, Louisiana, where in Shreveport, Louisiana, the only real access we had to food was Walmart. And that was very hard on me. And, you know, it was just, yeah, school cafeteria food. It's the same old story, right? Like, no one really gets fully nourished in that environment unless you're at a very special school. But yeah, so moving to Denmark, I discovered all sorts of wonderful pickles and sourdough bread. I had a lot of exchange student friends from Eastern Europe, and from Japan. So I made, you know, sushi and natto, and I was eating fish by that age then. I became pescatarian when I was about 18. So I was learning about pickled fish, eating a lot of pickled fish and smoked fish, which I love. And yeah, it just really deepened my appreciation for food and broadened my palate when I moved to Denmark. So that, I mean, that really changed a lot of my overall feelings on food. And then when I moved back to the United States, I was still kind of picking up on that and learning more about food. But I didn't actually begin learning about sustainable foods until I moved to Brooklyn. And I think that's also because it was kind of a resurgence of sustainable foods. Like I began eating meat when I was 25, and that was in Brooklyn. And it was simply because I knew I had access to really good meat that was raised humanely. I mean, it was, you know, and it wasn't just like, all right, now I'm eating meat. It was a slow process. You know, I started with chicken, and 3 months later brought pork in, and you know, beef I didn't really start eating until almost a year later. So yeah, it's been slow. And I think like a lot of people in my generation and generations older than myself, you know, we grew up with this kind of industrial food system where that's just what you're expected to eat, at least like in Texas where I grew up especially. And I think on the East Coast too, the only place where I've seen that's pretty different as far as my generation is concerned is on the West Coast, which is where I live now, which is, you know, great in a lot of ways. It's very convenient for sure.
So at what point did you decide that this was something that you needed to bring to a larger audience, you know, take that outside of your own personal kitchen and start bringing this education and awareness to other people?
Well, there was a real breaking point when I moved to the West Coast, and I realized that there was this deep awareness here, whereas that awareness isn't present in the other places I've lived. And I spent the first 20 years of my life roughly in Texas and Louisiana. And then I was in Philly and New York for, you know, 6 years after that before I moved to the West Coast. And yeah, once I moved to the West Coast, I mean, I definitely moved to the West Coast so I would have better access to land and food and, you know, just the microbial resources that I wanted to be able to ferment on a large scale. But once I realized that awareness was already in Oregon, where I moved to, just west of Eugene, yet none of it was available in the places where I had lived, which I still feel very connected to. I was like, wow, I kind of want to raise awareness. I want to go out and do education on the importance of sustainable food and beneficial microbes, and you know why it's important for us to really shift our focus in our foods so that we are nourishing the earth rather than destroying it.
Right.
So yeah, that really moved me to want to not only educate, but educate on a national scale where I could go reach communities who really needed this information.
So now tell us exactly what Fermentation on Wheels is, what communities you serve, and what exactly it is that you teach and how you go about teaching that.
Fermentation on Wheels is a grassroots project that I started in summer 2013, and it was a 2-year tour, originally meant to be 1 year, but it was very successful. So I stayed on the road for 2, which was wonderful. And in that time, I circumnavigated the country, spreading the knowledge of fermentation. I taught by donation classes to all ages, all socioeconomic levels. I really tried to focus on working with communities who would otherwise not have access to this knowledge. I've worked with a lot of youth and public school systems, but I've also done a lot of older adult classes. I've done classes in hospitals. I've really done a wide array of venues and different classes. I do a lot of vegetable fermentation mostly, because that is the most accessible form of fermenting. So if I'm kind of just dropping into a place where people are unfamiliar with fermentation, that's my kind of go-to, like, okay, I'm going to go teach people how to ferment vegetables. But I also teach classes about starter cultures. So any type of fermented food that requires inoculation with a starter culture, such as like sourdough or kombucha. And yeah, it's, these events are, I mean, along with being meant to educate, they also are a way to build community. So people who are interested in fermentation in the same city can kind of come together and get to know each other. I've organized a lot of potlucks as well, and they are fermentation-themed potlucks. So people who are already fermenting come and bring the dishes they're working on, or, you know, the ferments they're working on. And then also people who have not fermented at all, they'll make something that isn't fermented, and maybe they'll just enjoy the fermented dishes, or maybe they'll bring their first ferment. It's really just a way to kind of get the conversation started. And then my bus serves as it's a creative workshop space, fermentation laboratory, and library. So, you know, it's like when we eat the food, or when we sit in the class, like after that, we go on the bus and kind of explore all of the foods and beverages and look at books and really just, you know, open up the conversation to whatever we want it to be. And that's when I get to have a lot of one-on-one with people who are just as psyched about the foods I'm psyched about. So, yeah.
Awesome. What are some of the most surprising either responses or questions that you've received? I mean, obviously, you know, like, I didn't know anything about fermentation growing up. Nothing at all. I'd never heard of kimchi. I'd never heard of kombucha. I'd never heard of any of that stuff. And it's something that I've really only gotten into in the last 6 months, maybe, and even heard about in the last few years. So I'm sure that some of the audiences that you serve have never heard of this stuff, or might feel like there is kind of an ickiness factor because it is technically controlled rot, even though it's very healthy for you. Tell us about some of the most surprising interactions that you've had with people, or surprising things that other people have said.
Well, in regards to fermentation, I mean, one memorable comment, I was at the Mother Earth News Fair in Seven Springs, Pennsylvania a few years ago with my bus, and there were a lot of people on the bus. And when I go to festivals, I kind of just go on my whole like little fermentation monologue, like what it is and why it's great and taste this and, you know, just kind of, I do my gospel, my fermenty gospel. And then I just remember that this one moment where a woman walked on the bus and just kind of yelled through the bus, "Isn't this the stuff that gives you stomach cancer?" I was like, I went on this diatribe. I was just like, no, this is, you know, totally not true. These are the safest foods. They've been around for thousands of years. They're extremely good for our guts. If anything, you know, it's really good for our stomachs. It actually alkalizes our innards in the process, like through the bacteria. It's not like we're eating acid, you know, we're eating these acidic bacteria that are super microbe rich and great for us, and they're populating and diversifying our inner flora. Like it's a beautiful, wonderful thing that we've ignored for so long. And the fact that it's coming back, and there's like, I don't know, there's some misunderstandings about the importance of that still, and just the fact that like bacteria are bad, and I mean the idea that this stuff would cause cancer is just absurd to me. So, you know, it's probably one of the most surprising things that has ever happened. been asked. To be honest, my most surprising questions are usually about my lifestyle because I live this very unique lifestyle. Obviously, like my work is very connected to my life. Like mm-hmm. I work out of my bus and I also live out of my bus. You know, people ask me things like, so you only eat fermented foods and do you even eat non-fermented foods? And so I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'm a normal person who eats all of the things like that you eat. You know, I just really enjoy fermented foods and I like integrate a lot of those foods into my diet.
That's funny. What is one unexpected gift that you've received? Obviously, you are traveling the country, teaching other people, but what is something that you've received or that you've learned from doing this work?
Oh, I mean, the biggest thing I've gotten out of this is always follow your dreams. Like, don't ever let anyone tell you that what you want to do and what you think is best in your life is like too big or too crazy or too wild. You know, it's not about the money. It's not about how other people define success. It's about, you know, what makes you happy and, you know, the challenges you're up to. Also, just simply what you're passionate about. I think if we all lived with a little more inspiration and we wanted to live truly inspired lives, like this world would be a more awesome place than it is now even. So, yeah, I mean, that's what I've learned when I started doing this. It was very bleak. Like, I don't know, my friends and family were kind of terrified. And I was terrified too. So it didn't help that everyone else was terrified. But, you know, and I get it. I really get it now because the journey was hard. But I'm so glad that I did it and that I'm still doing it. I mean, I'm like living that life now. I mean, I'm stationary at the moment, but I will go back on the road and I'm just kind of digesting, you know, how amazing the past 2 years were, but also like how challenging it was and how when I get back on the road, I'm going to change things to make it even more sustainable mm-hmm. the next time around. For me, you know, emotionally, physically, and then also just like so that the project is this like thriving, growing, like ever-changing thing that people will keep connecting to and keep loving and like keep, you know, getting these kind of like sparks to make changes in their own lives.
Speaking of going back on the road, what exactly are you looking forward to in the next, say, 6 or 12 months? What's coming up for Fermentation on Wheels?
So I'm currently working on a book. So that's what's happening right now. And it's coming out in fall 2017. So that's a long time from now. But the book is an illustrated travelogue and recipe book mm-hmm. from that's all about the 2 years I was on the road. And I'm an illustrator as well. So it will be fully illustrated and it'll have about 50 recipes in it. And yeah, that's my full-time job right now. My manuscript is due at the end of the year. So, you know, it's a full-on project. And yeah, I'm really excited. I'm working with a publisher on the book. So it's kind of like all set up, ready to go. And yeah, I'm really grateful for that. I spent a year kind of, you know, thinking about my book idea and then I started writing a proposal and then I sent it out last fall. So yeah, after those few years of hard work, I was actually able to put something out into the world and get good reception about it. And now I'm putting that down and we'll share it with everyone soon.
Awesome. That's awesome to hear that you're going to be producing that. I'm sure a lot of people will be very interested in your adventures and your travels. So that's awesome. I want to get into our 7 sustainable questions, but before we do that, we are going to take a quick break.
Do you ever hear the suggestions given by our guests and think, yeah, that's great and all, but I don't have the time, the money, or even know where to start? Or maybe you just want someone to go through the journey with you. Well, this is your chance. If you're looking to live a more sustainable lifestyle each and every day, join the Sustainable Lifestyle Challenge. Each day, I will challenge your actions and your mindset to be more eco-conscious. You will have the full support of the Sustainable Lifestyle Challenge community, as well as myself, and we'll be with you every step of the way. Oh, and did I mention it's 100% free? The challenge starts September 12th, so don't miss out on the action. Hop on over to sustainablelifestylechallenge.com and sign up today. See you there. Again, that's sustainablelifestylechallenge.com.
So, Tara, I want to ask you to share with us one of your longstanding habits that you believe has dramatically improved your life.
Eating fermented food every day has dramatically improved my life, straight up. Yeah.
What is one new habit that you're cultivating in your life right now?
Oh, I don't know if it's a new habit, but it's one that I am like trying to bring back that like goes in and out, but patience, it's like daily patience. I've had like very patient moments in my life and I'm back to being like, go, 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 everything all at once. And yeah, it's not how it works. You have to, you have to chill out before like all the great things come.
Right. That, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What is one item that you've acquired for free in the last 6 months that has greatly impacted your life?
For free? Yeah, I mean, nothing is free, you know. I mean, I do a lot of trading. I live like super barter lifestyle for sure. And gosh, you know, I have a community in Eugene and we cook these awesome meals together like 3 to 5 times a week. And I really missed that for the 2 years I was on the road and like being home and eating with my people almost every night. That is like the biggest gift. Yeah. I mean, no one wants to eat alone every night. And I definitely did a lot of eating alone. I mean, I ate with people I met on the road often, but to have your kind of like people you can eat with and cook with and eat with and talk with. And, you know, I always bring a ton of sauerkraut and kimchi. So we kind of balance it out so that we're all getting, you know, it's like a potluck. Like it's like a 5-night-a-week potluck. And that is a super, super awesome life gift that I get to have in Eugene.
Yeah. I mean, community is a huge gift. And unfortunately, some of us, even if we're, you know, stationary for years at a time, just do not have that sort of social infrastructure that either we've been lucky enough to stumble into or have been able to foster ourselves. So yeah, community is a huge gift. Absolutely. If you had access to a time machine and could go back and speak with your past self at any point, as a child, as a teenager, as a young adult, when would you visit and what advice would you give yourself?
You know, I feel like the hardest times in my life have been where I was like struggling through loss of love or like loss of, you know, whether it was like friend or romantic. And like, I always had such a hard time moving through that. And I feel like today I'm much clearer about like how to move into relationships and not feel like too attached, too dependent, but still be able to like give a lot without giving like all of myself, and just kind of like understanding that that's okay. Like I shouldn't feel selfish or guilty for investing a lot of time in me or my work. And that's part of growing up, is just cultivating that inner you. And I think it's really easy as someone who like moves through life with a lot of love to want to just hold on and love everyone that you meet really, really, really hard and then kind of like lose yourself in that process. And yeah, there are multiple moments in my life where I wish I could have gone back and told myself that.
Awesome.
Like at least 3 moments.
Thank you very much for that. Very honest. Yeah, no, that's something that is really important for people to keep in mind, I think, at any point in our lives, but especially as young adults, you know, wading our way through how to love and communicate with others without, you know, completely losing yourself. So it's wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful advice there, actually. So aside from your own website, which I'll plug at the end, do you have an internet resource that you can share with our listeners? Something that's related to society or the environment, campaigns, projects, anything that you specifically utilize a great deal?
I know, online resources. You know, like I feel the thing I use most online is probably Pandora or downloading podcasts or, I mean, like, I think it's really important to keep listening, mm-hmm. to keep reading, and not only that, but to keep reading and listening to all of the contemporary work that is coming out now to stay abreast on, you know, what is relevant yeah. in our world, and to have that kind of like emotional but also technical understanding of the world around us, the world we are living in. And I feel, you know, I feel like that helps me a great deal in my work too, is like bettering myself as an artist to like keep following these new ideas and, you know, just what people are talking about. And music too, like music is really important. I feel that I get really inspired from listening to all the new works coming out, but also just like stimulating my mind and making sure that I have like this kind of constant input of like words and sounds. And, you know, like I pull so much inspiration from that. And I think I always have.
Excellent. What is one book that you would recommend for sustainable minds out there that are hoping to shift their mindset specifically to become the change that they want to see in the world?
Soul of a Citizen, for sure, which is pretty much about being an activist in a very cynical time, and kind of how to deal with that cynicism and get through it and still stay positive and say, like, you know, I can get through this. Like, I don't have to listen to what everyone else is saying. I don't have to feed into the negativity. Like, I can make change. So I feel like that's a really important book. It changed my life a lot when I read it many years ago. You know, I wouldn't say it's necessarily about sustainability. It's more, it is about sustainability, but it's more about like human resiliency and, you know, being a sustainable, like being emotionally and physically sustainable in a very difficult time mm-hmm. in our lives, where we have to keep pushing if we really want to see our future succeed. And the author of Soul of a Citizen is Paul Loeb. Yeah, and I don't know when it was written. I don't know like all the little details of it, but
that's okay. Yeah, that's awesome. I have someone else has not on the show, but someone I was speaking to recently, I think it was at a tree for an urban forestry conference, and someone mentioned that book. So it's definitely been on my radar for a little while. So I think I'm going to have to go check that one out. And
yeah, so good.
Yeah. So the final question here, it's been a long journey for you to start to finish for Fermentation on Wheels. And like you said, you're about to go out on the road here in a little bit again. Can you tell us what has been possibly the most important or integral piece of this entire journey for you, whether it's an individual person or an organization that you've had to foster a relationship with, just kind of the glue that has held it all together for you thus far?
Well, one, I do have an organization that offers a lot of guidance. Fractured Atlas, they're a nonprofit in New York City, and they are my fiscal sponsor. So that doesn't mean they like support me, but what they do is they give me nonprofit status so that I can apply for grants as a nonprofit. So I am eligible for, you know, like hundreds of more grants than I would be otherwise. Mm-hmm. I can also receive donations from people who want to support Fermentation on Wheels and send them a tax deductible receipt. So my sponsor has helped me immensely as far as being more legitimate, mm-hmm. like a legitimate charity. And then another thing that has really glued this all together is patience. And like I said earlier, that's a habit I want to try and practice more. It's like I had to really, really be patient to make this all work. And like, even with finding my sponsor, I mean, that wasn't something that just like, boom, like fell in my lap. I had to, I had to apply for that sponsorship, and I was like scrutinized for the, on in the application, and they accept like a few projects every quarter, and it was a lot of work, and everything that's gone into Fermentation on Wheels has been a lot of work. And you know, I just had to hold tight. Like, I just really had to hold tight and trust in myself and in my mission. So yeah.
Excellent. And I too am familiar with Fractured Atlas. Had a project on there several years ago, and have a lot of friends that have been supported by them throughout the years. So they are a wonderful resource if anyone listening to this show has an idea for a project and you're not exactly sure how to receive funding or guidance, especially with like legal stuff. And yeah, they are an amazing resource. And actually, they have a blog, so you can just go and read up on stuff. You don't necessarily have to apply to receive benefits from that organization. They are really wonderful. So, and I think that they are at fracturedatlas.org, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
So I would definitely encourage everyone to go check out Tara's website, fermentationonwheels.com, and go check out the schedule tab to see if she's going to be at a town near you anytime soon. She has her schedule listed here. You can also find her on Facebook, Fermentation on Wheels, as well as on Instagram, and also Tumblr, fermentationonwheels.tumblr.com. She's got wonderful recipes. Like I said, she's got her schedule up, and she's also got a shop where you can purchase some of her wares. I wanted to ask you if you had any final words or parting pieces of guidance that you wanted to offer our listeners.
I think that's it. I think that's it. Thank you so much for the thoughtful interview.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for doing this with us.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You've been listening to A Sustainable Mind podcast. To hear more interviews just like this one, please subscribe on iTunes or visit asustainablemind.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.